Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Good luck with the most beautiful game. Do us proud.
Red alert! They're up and running again. So smooth, so sweet, splendid, succinct, just glorious execution.
Guys, all I'm looking for is 60% effort, 4,000% of the time.
How sharp was that? Sharp of mind and body.
And that's why you see those beautiful tears.
Look at his movements. The most dangerous man on the planet. Nobody picks him up.
Wide-eyed, thrilled, bemused. How on earth did that happen?
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Wondergold, the red-hot soccer betting podcast from The Action Network. My name is Michael Leboff. I am your host. And joining me, as always, are my friends and colleagues, Anthony DeBundo and BJ Cunningham. 10 more Premier League games to talk to. Then we'll jump around Europe, pick out our best bets in the other major leagues, give out our favorite underdogs and our best bet in the Premier League. But there's only one place to start. A relegation six-pointer between Manchester United and Liverpool. Monday Night Football, 3 p.m. at Old Trafford, the Theater of Dreams. United plus 425 at home. Liverpool minus 170. The draw is plus 330. I alluded to it on our last episode. Sometimes a plan just goes well. And before the season started, I said, if United really, you know, shits the bed against Brighton and Brentford, which happened, you're going to get a great price to go against a Liverpool team that I just don't think or didn't think was going to be at the races yet this season. And they haven't been. And that's what's happened here, BJ. United at better the 4-1 at home. And I know they're playing Liverpool, but this is not your older brother's Liverpool from the past two seasons so far.
Yeah. I mean, what's funny is if you're on social media at all today, like Manchester United has been interested, I think 17 different guys in the last three days, which is kind of crazy. So clearly, Ten Hag or whoever is basically saying like, hey, I can't play with the current guys that I have. I can't run my system. So now it's up for United to be in essentially scramble mode and overpay like drastically for a lot of guys. I mean, Casemiro is a big one. They're going to double his salary. They're going to pay £50 million for a 30-year-old central midfielder, which is kind of crazy. But you saw against Brentford, they don't play well against teams that can press them. I mean, they don't have a ball controlling central midfielder. Like I've said that, I don't know, three or four times already, but they don't have it. Like they don't have a guy who can play under pressure. Scott McTominay gave one away, which ended up being a goal. And all four goals against Brentford were essentially off of mistakes. Like you look at the final XG, it was pretty close. I think it was 1.6 to 1.1. Like not that big of a gap. United controlled a ton of possession. A lot of that had to do with game state. But now you go play Liverpool, who, I'll be honest, I would have gone the other way. I would have said, before the Liverpool Crystal Palace match happened, and even before, you know, Thiago got injured, I was looking at taking Liverpool team total over 2.5, you know, plus 125, plus 130. Well, things have kind of changed now that Darwin Nunez got a red card, Firmino's questionable. So Jota's still injured. So now you have questions like who's going to be up top for Liverpool? Like, obviously, they still have Diaz and they still have Salah. But I told you about the splits with Thiago, and it was still very relevant. And the biggest thing about Liverpool is I know a lot of people are saying, yes, they were really dominant against Fulham and Crystal Palace. And were they? Because no. And if you look at the final XG, no, they actually weren't very dominant. They were dominant in terms of possession, in terms of shots. Final XG against Crystal Palace is 1.7 to 1.5. At the end of the day, all that matters is the chances you create at the end of it. So in theory, they were, yeah, possession wise, they were dominant, but in terms of chances, the actual quality of their chances created, no, they actually weren't that dominant. So a 1-1 draw was actually probably the right score. So I'm passing on this one. There's no chance in hell I'm going to play United now or really ever this season, unless they bring in a ton of new players. So, I mean, Liverpool is getting, they just have too many injuries right now. They got 10 guys on the injury list. You got no Thiago. You have, like I already mentioned, you have essentially three forwards that might be out. Matip's now hurt. So you're getting a lot of guys who maybe wouldn't have started for Liverpool at the beginning of the season, but are still really good players. And can they roll with a midfield of James Milner and Henderson and Harvey Elliott? I don't know for a full season. And in terms of this matchup, I don't know what's going to happen. This is just going to be chaos. I don't know which way it's going to go. Michael, it could go great. You know, United could win 2-1 and everybody could say, oh my gosh, Ten Hag's got this thing turned around, or Liverpool could do what they did last year at the end of the season and pace them four nothing. So I don't know. I'm just passing. This game has just chaos written all over it.
Yeah. I think you kind of made my point for me, which is,
I mean, yes, but at the same time, there's no way in hell I'm betting United in this current state of United. There's no way.
But you're getting a good price to do it. That's the thing,
exactly, right? When you want to buy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're getting a great price to do it. And you said something about their midfield, right? Like, what has everyone been saying about the United problem? The heart of their issues is that they don't have a midfield. Well, Liverpool doesn't have one right now either. So that significant weakness for United is kind of muted. Like, they're not going up against Thiago, right? They're going to be going up against James Milner. So, I mean, it's a good number. That's all that matters, is that you're getting a good number on a team 3 weeks ago was rated as the fifth or sixth best team in the Premier League by the betting market. Anthony, as our Liverpool fan on the podcast, what do you have to say?
I'm going to push back on BJ's point about Liverpool not being fine. You know, we look at the final XG, and that is true. You know, Crystal Palace, you know, did end up creating 1.5 expected goals. A good amount of that came late after the red card. Liverpool played 149 minutes at full strength this year. They've created 2.61 expected goals per 90. That is the most in the Prem.
Against Fulham, against the newly promoted team at Crystal Palace, though.
Well, yeah. Let's not say the sky is falling. I mean, they're plus 1.32 XG difference per 90 when they've played teams at full strength. And yes, that's still Fulham and Palace. And they're not, you know, two top teams, even though I think we're all high on Palace and we're pretty impressed by the performance. I think we're having a very different conversation if Liverpool just scores first and wins the game. You know, we're saying, oh, they had a weird result on opening day and they took care of business at home against Palace. And they were totally dominant. And now I will agree with BJ's point about the defense. And this is something that I've talked about on this pod since we started it. And it feels like maybe we're finally getting some of it. But the defense is a little bit vulnerable without Thiago in the lineup. When they do play Nunez, he doesn't do the kind of defensive work that their forwards of the past, like Firmino, have done. And without, you know, a capable center back next to Virgil van Dijk, when they're required to start Nat Phillips, that's a big weakness. We've talked about Trent's defensive vulnerabilities. Harvey Elliott playing, he doesn't do much defensive work for a midfielder. He's much more of an attacking midfielder. So I think there's absolutely truth to the fact Liverpool in its current state is going to be much weaker defensively than the numbers we saw them put up last year. And of course, they've already conceded 3 goals. So I think I buy that, but I'm not buying that Liverpool's attack is going to be any worse. Now, in this matchup especially, I am passing because, again, BJ mentioned too many injuries. I would lean toward United at the current number based on my numbers, which is insane because of how much you know, I've looked to bet against United in the first 2 weeks. But I think now would be the time, if you were going to buy United, it's the time to get in. But again, I'm going to pass.
Yeah, so real quick on that. I'm not saying that Liverpool, like the sky is falling, they're going to fall out of the top four. I'm saying that the sky is falling as they're nowhere close to Man City right now at their current state. And this might be a runaway for City. I mean, you know, in terms of projection, I'm with you. I have Liverpool at minus 192, United at plus 509. So, I mean, it's a pass.
I'm pretty close to the market.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty close to what the market has. So, and especially you factor in all the injuries for Liverpool. So, you know, wouldn't hate to look at maybe an over at a high price.
United matches have treated me very well this season. A 5-1 winner.
Also, like De Gea, regression. First 2 goals were just straight De Gea.
That's regression.
It is regression. And that, I think that's something we need to talk about in the beginning of the season.
Yep. Post shot.
What if De Gea is worse? Right? Because he was up there almost close to Jose Sa numbers. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, the second goal was more just like he can't kick the ball. And that's like a longer term issue. We could talk about it later. But it's unlikely De Gea is going to just toss 2 balls into his own net again.
Yeah. It sounds like everybody here is in agreement that United is the way. You guys are just not brave enough to do it. Like, there's a lot of things here that are telling you that the price is too high. Anyways, that's enough on this relegation 6-pointer. There's another relegation 6-pointer we'll get to in a little bit. 7:30 a.m. kickoff on Saturday morning. Spurs minus 270 at home. Wolves 7-1 on the road. Draw plus 425. It's a little bit of a letdown spot, I think, for Tottenham coming off of, you know, the rousing week one win and then the crazy match against Chelsea that ended 2-2. And then Wolves are such a, you know, sleepy team so far this season that kind of adds to like the letdown spot potential. And you're getting a big price on Wolves, but this is a pretty easy pass for me in the early kickoff on Saturday. So it would be Wolves or nothing, but I'm just going to pass and toss it to Anthony for his take on his Spurs.
Yeah, you know, I thought Spurs were okay on Sunday, and I think people overreacted to the first hour, and I think Chelsea did some things tactically that really made them, outplay Spurs, the midfield superiority, Conte kind of turning back the clock, looking like vintage Conte and looking like at his best. And Conte made, and Antonio Conte made some adjustments to, you know, what Tuchel was doing to free up Mason Mount, what Tuchel was doing to overwhelm certain wide areas, and finally got, you know, sown free a little bit and, you know, brought, you know, changed up the midfield a little bit. Richarlison, I thought, was lively. I thought Spurs were fine for the most part. You know, they deserved the result. Probably not.
You know, no, they didn't deserve
it. You could say that they probably didn't deserve it. But overall, over the course of 180 minutes, I've been kind of lukewarm on Spurs. I think they were fine against Southampton. I think people overreacted because of how good the finishing was in that game, whereas the field tilt was pretty even. And now they got, you know, pretty well dominated in terms of field tilt at Chelsea. Now you expect that. The look here for me would be toward a Wolves team total over, based on just Spurs looking a little bit leaky defensively, and I'm a little bit concerned about that and overall, but the number wasn't good enough for me, so I'm going to be staying away here. The Wolves team total was -130. If that got down closer to -110, 115, I would bite. I do think they can cause some problems for Spurs, but overall, going to be passing here.
All right, we'll move to the 10 a.m. kickoffs. The other relegation six-pointer, Everton, -105 against Nottingham Forest, +320 the draw, +250 at Goodison Park. More transfer news from Nottingham Forest, and apparently them and Everton are both going after soon to be former Brighton striker Neil Mopai. Everton still scoring issues. It looks like that's going to be a running theme until Calvert-Lewin comes back. However, they did look much better with Amadou Onana in the middle of the field for those last 15 minutes and Rondon up top, which is crazy just to even say. But now Anthony Gordon and Dele Alli might be on the way out, so that will just add to the scoring issues. From a betting perspective, it looks like a play on Forest here is the way to go. You're getting a good number to take on an Everton team that is just in flux. So +320 looks like a decent number for a team that was very lucky to win last week in Forest, but I mean, it's just there's right now at this very moment, there's just not that much between these two teams. So Forest are nothing for me. BJ, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. I'm taking Nottingham Forest plus half a goal and -110. With all the injuries that Everton is dealing with right now, I don't think they should be this big of a favorite. You're going to be missing Calvert-Lewin, Yuri Mina, Ben Godfrey, Andre Gomes, and Abolu Decore. Without Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison last year, Everton averaged one expected goal per match. Last season, when Mina was in the lineup, they only allowed 1.1. expected goals per match. Without him, it was 1.58. Now, I understand last season they didn't have center back depth. This year, they have Tarkowski, they have Connor Cody, but it still highlights a larger point that Everton is much better when Yuri Mina is in the lineup. And I mean, without him against Aston, they allowed Aston Villa to create 1.7 expected goals. So I don't expect this defense to just get drastically better without him in the lineup. Nottingham Forest, I mean, listen, they were a lot better in the second match than they were in the first, but it was a really low bar to climb. But if you take away the penalty from West Ham, the expected goals battle was about even, but offensively, you know, Nottingham Forest did have 24 touches in West Ham's penalty area. They did have 12 box entries and 17 shot creating actions. That's much better than what happened at Newcastle. But defensively, there are still some pretty gaping problems. I mean, 32 touches in their own penalty area, 30 shot creating actions allowed. It's going to be a struggle for Nottingham Forest. But then again, they're not facing an offense that has really great attackers right now. I mean, Solomon Rondon, you can say whatever about him, but I don't really see him creating that much in this type of match. And I mean, is Everton really going to hold a ton of possession here? Are they going to be the more ball dominant side? I mean, last season they were dead last in the Premier League in average possession. So if Forest wants to set up very defensively and look to counter, I mean, can Everton be this ball dominant side that can break down a low block and create a ton of chances? I don't think so. So, I mean, I have Everton projected at +121. So I think there's a little bit of value on Forest. Plus half a goal at -110.
Anthony, what are your thoughts here? Everton and Forest.
Yeah, I would actually lean toward the over a little bit here. You know, I think what we saw in the first couple of games from both of these defenses was some major question marks. You know, Everton did a good job in the first match of defending its own penalty area against Chelsea. But I think that may, in hindsight, after what we saw Chelsea do to Spurs, be more about Chelsea's problems than it was Everton's great defending. And now you take Yerry Mina out of that. Chelsea, again, against Spurs, struggling to get that final ball, to get that shot off in the box from clear chances. Their defense conceding a ton, though. And I thought it was really evident once Emi Buendia came on for Villa, how easy it was for Villa to just walk right into the penalty area. And so that was a pretty big concern. I understand, you know, Everton did show some signs of life, you know, with, you know, immediately after conceding, but it was kind of a fluky own goal. Villa had switched off. So I don't read a ton into that. I read a lot more into the fact that through two matches, they've conceded about 2.3 expected goals per 90. That's a major concern for Everton. And defensively, Forest, I mean, BJ talked about it. I mean, they had two separate plays that were bar down. Then they had a ball cleared off the line that was actually should have been, I thought, a red card. And then they got a penalty that they saved. So, you know, there was a good bit of fortune that came into that Forest defense. And even going back to the first match, they easily could have lost that by more, just how dominant Newcastle was. So I think Forest, especially away from home here, could have some defensive issues. The biggest problem is who's scoring the goals for Everton, like BJ mentioned. So that's the only thing that would scare me a little bit. But plus money over 2.5 would be the lean for me. We'll see what the Everton lineup ends up looking like come Saturday, and I'll decide if I'm going to end up being on that.
All right, we'll move to another relegation six-pointer, Leicester City, minus 120, taking on Southampton, plus 310, the draw, plus 290. This one's taking place at the King Power in Leicester. That's a very similar market to the one we just talked about between Everton and Forest. Southampton down to plus 150 to be relegated, making them the third favorite. These two defenses combined, 12 goals allowed already this season, six each, and then 6.6 expected goals allowed combined between the two of them in two games. I kind of like Southampton here. I think it's similar to what I was talking about with Everton and Forest, where, yeah, Saints are bad, right? We know Southampton's bad, but Leicester, the difference just isn't wide enough for Leicester to be this big a favorite, even though they're at home. With the way they've looked, with their transfer issues, the fact that they haven't brought anyone in yet, players could be leaving. So, yeah, Southampton, they are a tricky side to beat because of their press. I just think Leicester could have more trouble with them than the market implies. So I'll be taking a shot on the Saints plus 310 here. What do you have, Anthony?
Yeah, I bet Southampton have a lean toward the under. I think I may end up getting there. It's my first Leicester under of the season. You mentioned it, right? Like, these defenses have been bad thus far, but they haven't been as bad as the underlying or as the surface level numbers indicate. Leicester conceding 4 to Arsenal. Yeah, they got ripped open a couple of times, but a lot of that was just Gabriel Jesus magic. He had over two expected goals himself. And I Southampton doesn't have any attacker of that quality. And Saints, you know, we saw them get run open a couple times by Spurs. But overall, I thought they improved defensively against Leeds in the second matchup, and they were at home. The thing about Leicester and the concerning thing here is there's only three teams in the league that have averaged less than one expected goal per match thus far in attack. And we have two of them playing here. And so for the total to be as high as it is at 3, it's very hard for me to get to that number given how little we've seen from the Leicester attack and how little we've seen from this Saints attack too. So I lean toward the under. Of course, you know, we could do this all year with Saints. We're going to say that they concede a ton of big scoring chances, and that's a major issue. And Leicester has set piece issues. They did concede off of a set piece already this year. But again, at a certain point, the number just gets a little too high, and we're kind of at that point here. I agree with your point, Michael, on the first thing, which is that there is not enough of a difference between these two teams to warrant Leicester being this much of a home favorite. I make Leicester plus 115, so willing to take the Saints at even money plus a half.
All right, let's move on to the team of the podcast. This is a Crystal Palace podcast, of course, plus 155 at home against Aston Villa, plus 190, the draw here, plus 230. I think this one is pretty simple. Who's the better team right now between these two teams? I think it's Palace. So you're getting a good number on them at home, plus 155 against a Gerrard team right now at this second. I think it is. I think in terms of talent, you could probably say Villa on paper should be the better team. But right now it's Palace. And you're getting a great defensive side at home where they do their best work against a lumbering offensive side who, sure, they did show some signs of life against Everton, but that's not really saying much right now, as we just talked about. So plus 155 on Palace, I think, is a great number. Coming off of two really, really good performances against Arsenal and Liverpool, especially defensively, it's just, I think they're the better side. BJ, what about you?
I agree. I mean, tough schedule out of the gates for Crystal Palace. Arsenal and Liverpool, only a minus 0.3 expected goal differential through those two matches. So pretty impressive stuff from Palace. And, you know, Crystal Palace, the reason they're going to constantly show value in the market, whether they're playing a big six side or not, is because they profile so well, both as an underdog. You saw them basically defend for their lives against Liverpool, but they're also great as a favorite, being able to control possession against smaller sides. So last season against non-big six teams, Crystal Palace averaged 1.3 expected goals per 90 and only allowed 0.94. That's pretty good. And they did a fantastic job all season long of really controlling possession and build-up play. I mean, they were top 10 and 10 plus pass sequences and sequence time. They were a top eight pressing team by passes per defensive action, high turnovers, and pressure success rate. And that's big against Aston Villa, who last season was 17th in offensive passes per defensive action. And the first 2 weeks, did not face good pressing teams in Bournemouth and Everton. So this is going to be a different type of animal for Aston Villa. And, you know, I spoke about it 2 weeks in a row now, but Aston Villa under Gerrard, 1.2 expected goals per 90 minutes. They now have only had 20 big scoring chances in 29 matches with him in charge. That's not good. And now we have to go up and face a top five defense from last season, who still looks just as good as they did last year. And also these two teams faced towards the end of last season. It was a 1-1 draw, but Crystal Palace won on expected goals 1.3-1 at Villa Park. So, and then, of course, you know, we've said it a million times, but Crystal Palace at Selhurst Park, unbelievable. Plus 10.2 expected goal differential last season. So I'm taking Palace, draw no bet at minus 125. I think there's some good value in that. I'd play it up to minus 130.
Anthony, what about your thoughts here? Our boys, Crystal Palace and Aston Villa.
Yeah, so I've got these two teams very comparable. So I do have show a little bit of value on Palace being at home as well. I hate to bet against my Villa boys because I know we all love Palace, but I most certainly do love Villa. And I was extremely encouraged by the performance in the last, the second half against Everton. I understand it is Everton. It was at home, but I thought the way they were able to kind of finally show an ability to get the ball into the final third and create scoring chances off of it was extremely encouraging. With that being said, like BJ mentioned, now they're on the road. They're up against a Palace side who has been stellar defensively, great with the ball. And so overall, I think this is going to end up probably being a stay away from me. One interesting thing, you know, last year we got 2.5 in this game. Now it's 2.25. So, you know, any value I would have looked toward the under, I bet the under when they played in the spring, that is gone, unfortunately. So we'll not be playing the total in this match. If it does get any lower, I will actually look to play the over in this match. Did like what I saw, like I said, from the Villa attack and, Palace's attack much more lively at home than it's been away from home this year. So, overall, I do find it interesting because, you know, Palace has the ball, but that kind of is how Villa likes to play sometimes with their ability to counter directly. So it is an interesting kind of chess match and, you know, who does want the ball and all that kind of is why I like the under last year when these two teams play, but now the number's gone. So I'll probably end up passing here.
An interesting thing about Villa is they seem to get better when they took Philip Coutinho off and put Emi Buendia on too.
It was interesting.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's an interesting call for Gerrard to have to make. All right, let's move to Fulham and Brentford now. A little London derby for you. Fulham plus 145 at home. Brentford near 2-1 on the road, plus 195. The draw plus 245. Very similar market to Palace and Villa. And a similar thought. I think Brentford is the better team than Fulham here. I know it shows with when you factor in home field advantage, but I think the gap is a little wider than these odds suggest. The Bees, only 1.4 expected goals allowed so far against Leicester and Manchester United, one of which came on the road. So the defense looks like it's humming along just fine. That's second best XGA, only behind Manchester City. And they should also be able to handle Alexander Mitrovic in the middle of that box. They have the personnel to do it. And given Fulham's defensive issues, I just think this is a good spot for Brentford's offense to continue trending up. So give me our Bees, baby, plus 195 on the road at Craven Cottage. BJ, what do you have?
Yeah, not only a London derby, but a West London derby between Fulham and Brentford. I mean, I think this one could kind of turn into a little bit of a snoozer. I mean, we've learned from Marco Silva in the first two matches is that Fulham's going to be just fine with playing without the ball. I mean, the amount of possession they had a ton of possession in the championship, but through the first two matches, they have the second lowest average possession at 37%. But they do have an even expected goal differential with that little of possession, which is pretty kind of impressive considering they hosted Liverpool and went and played Wolves on the road. Now against Wolves defensively, they were actually, I thought, really good. They held them to 7 shots, 13 touches in the penalty area, and only 0.7 XG, despite letting Wolves have about 59% possession. Since they've had so little of the ball, they do have the third most pressures in the Premier League, but their pass per defensive action is quite low and their pressure success rate is around what the league average was last season. the thing about Brentford is they will struggle if they play against teams that can press them successfully. I mean, they're 18th in pressure success rate allowed and 19th in ball recoveries allowed. But that doesn't mean Brentford is just going to be able to play right through them or be able to dominate possession. I mean, the Bees, they were 14th in average possession last year, 15th in average sequence time. And listen, as much as I love Brentford, I mean, last season they were not an offensive juggernaut. I mean, they were 10th in XG, 13th in shots per 90, and 8th in big scoring chances. So a pretty average offense in the Premier League. So I'm going to go both teams to score no at plus 115. I think it's a pretty decent price for a match that I'm not sure who's going to be able to control possession. I think we have two pretty good defensive sides here. I mean, Fulham in the championship only allowed 0.87 XG per 90 minutes, which is really good. And they've made some additions, especially their defense and to their defensive midfield that actually, I think, improves them. So I'm going both teams to score no at plus 115 because I think it's a fantastic price.
I agree. I'm on the under personally, 2.5, minus 110, minus 105s are out there as well. I don't really know why this is up from 2.25. I think it, you know, obviously Brentford goes out and scores 4 against Man United, but we already talked about that game and why a couple of those goals were a little bit fluky and how they kind of took advantage of the fact that United played one defensive midfielder and it was Fred, and Fred got caught out of position a bunch of times and just left the whole field open. And they had a couple of beautiful counters, but I don't think Fulham is going to open themselves up in that way. You mentioned the Bees. They were an average team despite dominance on set pieces. They were a very below average attacking side in open play, especially on the road. And so Fulham's ability to play without the ball, you talked about it, 7 shots and about 0.7 XG. And their best chance came because the goalie ran into the defender and set up a tap in that Wolves missed. So you take that out and it's like, okay, they really didn't create anything from open play or from set pieces for that matter. So Fulham being good without the ball, Fulham being a potential early season under team going forward as they continue to be excellent as a defensive team with Paulinha and Pereira, all encouraging signs. So I played the under 2.5 here. Surprised it was not 2.25.
All right, let's wrap up the Saturday matches with Bournemouth plus 750 against Arsenal minus 260, the draw plus 380. I got nothing here. I think if anything, it would be Arsenal's like a parlay piece, maybe with like Chelsea or something. BJ, what do you have?
This season's going to suck if Arsenal just keeps getting overvalued like this. I mean, this is way too high for Arsenal. I mean, yeah, they've been great through the first two matches. I mean, XG was pretty close against Crystal Palace. I mean, we all went through that match was a lot closer than expected. I mean, Leicester defensively, it is what it is. But Bournemouth, I mean, I don't think they were as bad as the final scoreline indicated against Manchester City. I mean, City only created 0.68 expected goals. They didn't have a big scoring chance, and they didn't allow City to have a shot in their own 6-yard box. So, like, it wasn't that bad of a defensive performance from Bournemouth. And honestly, I mean, for a newly promoted side, like, they're actually pretty decent defensively. And they defended with a lead against Aston Villa, only allowed them to create 0.9 expected goals in the first match. So I'm expecting Scott Parker to once again just pack it in and play ultra defensive, and we'll see if Arsenal can break down a low block. I mean, the biggest thing here, I mean, I could try and say some bad things about Arsenal. I mean, there's not really much bad you can say through the first two matches. I mean, Jesus has looked awesome. Saliba looks great. But if you look around at other projection models, I have Arsenal at minus 112, which I know sounds crazy. But if you look at 538, they have Arsenal at minus 140. Info Goal has Arsenal at minus 130. So sitting at minus 260, they're just overvalued. And so, you know, it sucks. But I have to take Bournemouth plus 1.5 at minus 140 because I am showing value on it. So Bournemouth plus 1.5 at minus 140. And let's hope for an Arsenal 1-0 win.
Yeah, I just have a little bit of an issue trying to find where Bournemouth is going to score here. All right,
Bournemouth 0.36 expected goals per match thus far.
And that's fine.
It's really bad.
They have to score.
And they did get the 2 goals against Villa, 1 off a set piece. You know, how many set pieces are they really getting against Arsenal? That's the thing, right? Like, they just don't have the midfield, the kind of midfield that can trouble Arsenal. But again, like BJ said, I agree. I mean, I have Arsenal minus 150. I can't get them to the number that they're at.
It does bring up like an interesting point, right? Like, so much in the early season is so much noise to kind of sort through what like any of the numbers are actually saying. And it comes down to a lot of raw handicapping and just from the matchup perspective. That's why I think Arsenal is actually not a bad bet here if you're going to lay the goal in a half or put them in a parlay, because they're going to score. And I just don't think Bournemouth is like it's what they've shown the past their first two games. They don't give any indication that they're going to be able to put up any crooked numbers. even though they did score against Villa twice in their opener. It just, this looks like a terrible, terrible matchup for them to be able to hang with a team that looks like it is humming offensively.
Yeah, we realistically need five matches before we have any kind of baseline on a team, especially given the early season schedule differentials. And then 10 matches is when you can say XG becomes a little bit more predictive going forward. So the early season, you know, it's like we have what we thought about this team coming into the season based on last year. And then we add in like one data point, two data points, and we can't overreact, right? Like the market will in certain spots, but we can't, you know, overreact to just one or two games. And I think that's very true for Arsenal. You know, I mean, think about what we would have said about Arsenal, what we did say about Arsenal last year at this time when they lost to Brentford, got pasted by Chelsea and pasted by City. And they, you know, we were laughing at them at the bottom of the table. They almost got top four.
You know who that reminds me of?
Manchester United.
That's right.
It happens plus 425 pretty much every big six team at some point. It's happened to Liverpool. It's happened to Tottenham. It's happened now to United. It's happened to Arsenal. I mean, and it's, you know, I mean, Chelsea at one point, you know, they finished eighth one year after winning one of the titles. So it happens to pretty much every team except for Man City because they have too much money.
It helps when you're owned by a nation state. All right, let's move to Sunday now. Leeds United 5-1 at home, hosting Chelsea -190. The draw here is +340. This is a massive step up for Leeds, who got pummeled by the big six last season, including three games under Jesse Marsh. City, Arsenal, and Chelsea beat them 8-1 in that crazy run that put them into the drop zone. And Chelsea beat them 3-0 in that run. That was a couple months after Marsh took over, a couple weeks at least. So we do have some idea of how they play when they have to punch up. It's not particularly pretty. And I'm pretty impressed with what we've seen at Chelsea so far this season. So I like Chelsea -1.5 +145 here, because I think if Chelsea does win, and the market's telling you that they should, it probably will come by multiple goals, considering what Leeds has been showing defensively. So I either, like, you know, like I alluded to with Arsenal, I think an Arsenal-Chelsea moneyline parlay, if you want to square out, is fine. But I also like Chelsea laying a goal and a half at +145. Good price there. Anthony, what do you have for us, Leeds and Chelsea?
Yeah, you know, that game back when they played in the spring was a little bit tricky because there was a red card in the 20th minute to Daniel James. Leeds were off to a slow start, but I thought they were growing into the game at that point, and it was in that run where they got the red card against Arsenal, the red card against Chelsea, and really never had a chance to get a result in either. And they actually, you know, held Chelsea to 1.5 expected goals and just one expected goal for the 70 minutes that they played down a man. So I do think that there is a world where Chelsea does win this match, but we have seen this time and time again with these Tuchel sides. They look to grind out results, especially away from home. And until they show me an ability to create separation and create consistent scoring chances, I'm just not going to really buy into it. Remember, Chelsea closed -150 against Everton just 2 weeks ago. And I think Leeds is a better team than Everton. I've got them projected as a better team than Everton. And so I show value here on Leeds. And I think Chelsea should only be about -145. So that's even after upgrading Chelsea off of those two performances where I thought they were pretty good. So overall, even though I now again have Chelsea as the third best team in the Prem, you mentioned it, Leeds also gets a bump because they have played really well, created over two expected goals against Southampton. We're clearly the better side on the opening weekend as well against Wolves. So their ability to kind of play without the ball, let the opponent have the ball, and then wait for their moments to press, I think plays pretty well here in this game against Chelsea. I do expect Chelsea to dominate the possession, but again, N'Golo Kante going off with a potential injury against Spurs is a concern, and I'm going to take Leeds +1.
All right, let's move on to the other 9 a.m. start on Sunday. That's West Ham +125 at home against Brighton +215. The draw is +240. I'm pretty sure how this conversation is going to go. So, BJ, we'll let you kick it off.
Yeah, I mean, you could say, I mean, West Ham, they were pretty kind of unlucky to lose to Nottingham Forest last weekend. But this is going to be a much different type of opponent. I mean, they were able to control possession against Nottingham Forest. They're not going to be able to do that here against Brighton. I mean, defensively, I still have a lot of question marks about West Ham. Agird is still recovering from ankle surgery. Ogbonna's questionable. They've sold Diop. So is it going to roll with Craig Dawson and Kurt Zouma again? Because that didn't work last year. I mean, they allowed together when they played, they allowed 1.45 XG per 90 minutes. So with Ogbonna actually in the lineup, it's 1.15 expected goals per 90 minutes. So he does make a big difference. What I'm worried about is what West Ham is going to be able to do to create anything offensively against, and they haven't, which they haven't been able to do against some of the top defenses in the Premier League. So last season, against the top six defenses by non-penalty expected goals. Brighton was sixth. West Ham created 1.1 expected goals per 90 minutes. Against the rest of the Premier League, they averaged 1.4 expected goal per 90 minutes. Additionally, they just played Brighton on the final day of the season last year, and Brighton pasted them 3-1 and won on XG 1.7 to 0.3. And, you know, West Ham, what they do well offensively, Brighton is able to counter that. So you look last year, West Ham, number one team in the Premier League in crosses completed to the penalty area. Brighton was fourth defensively. West Ham, fifth in big scoring chances created. Brighton, fourth in big scoring chances allowed. And also, West Ham's got to play a Europa Conference League qualification playoff against Viborg on Thursday. So it's the first leg. So I'd imagine that some of the starters are probably going to play in that one. So, yeah, I love Brighton here. I only have West Ham projected at plus 154. So I like Brighton draw no bet at plus 128.
We're, of course, huge, huge Viborg
fans. Of course, we're huge Viborg fans.
Action Network's parent company, Better Collective, are part owners of Viborg. So
they are 70% owners. So 70%. They are the owners of Viborg, pretty much.
Majority owners.
Up, 10 to up 1 with, on that. 10 to 1 on Thursday, by the way.
Get in on it. Anthony, anything here? Brighton and West Ham?
Yeah, I'll make it 3 for 3. Brighton, in my projections, is a pick 'em. I've bet this match every time they've played in the last 2 years. I bet Brighton against West Ham at the end of 2021. I bet Brighton in both meetings last year. They cashed tickets for me both times. And the market continues to be too high on the Hammers and too low on the Seagulls in this matchup especially. I agree with BJ that Brighton has actually improved considerably in defensive transition in the last year. And that was actually, I thought, the biggest improvement they made under Potter last year was their ability to prevent those kind of transition moments from really getting them. And I think that's come from more time in the system and more structure under Potter. And I think that is taking away what West Ham relies so heavily on for scoring. Scamacca has not impressed thus far. Antonio continues to look more like, you know, the Mikel Antonio before the breakout that he had in 2020. So I'm going to take the Seagulls. I took them plus a quarter at minus 110. I also like them on the draw no bet line at plus 125. I project Brighton at plus 105 on the draw no bet line. So I've got this pretty much a toss up. And I think at plus 125, or if you want to take the quarter of a goal, because Brighton loves a draw, you'll still win half your bet. I love the Seagulls here.
Yeah, I'm on the money line. Plus 215 on Brighton. They're the better team in the matchup right now. At this very moment, they are better than West Ham. The 11:30 matchup on Sunday's, you know, I guess City's first significant test of the season, considering what West Ham rolled out against them in week one. They're going to the Northeast to take on Newcastle. The Magpies plus 750 at home, City minus 275 on the road. The draws plus 400. We talk a lot last season about City unders, about how just, you know, with good teams, the over is always going to be a little inflated because people will see Kevin De Bruyne, Erling Haaland, Phil Foden, perhaps Bernardo Silva if he sticks around, Riyad Mahrez, et cetera, go down the list. And they just think, you know, they're going to be goals in the City side. City can cover an over under of 3 in the first 25 minutes of a game if they really wanted to. And that usually puts some value on the under. I think it's a good bet here because of how patient Manchester City is. Like they are kind of, you know, lumbering. They'll put you to sleep and then they'll find the right path. That's how Pep wants them to play. And I just don't think Newcastle is the team that's going to bring them out of that shell, even at home. So I like the under here at 3 minus 115. Other than that, like I don't have anything to say about the money line. I think the price is still a little too low on Newcastle. It'll be interesting. BJ, what do you have here?
Yeah, something similar. Both teams scored no at even money. I mean, City, rightfully so, massive favorite again. First two matches, they've looked fantastic, especially defensively. I mean, 0.5 total XG allowed, 9 shots and 17 touches in their own penalty area. Those are dominant type numbers. And I mean, this is just continuation of last season when they only allowed 0.64 non-penalty expected goals per match. We're number one in pretty much every single defensive metrics. And I mean, listen, Newcastle, they were bad offensively against Brighton. I mean, they created 0.2 expected goals, 4 shots and 14 touches in the penalty area. So what do you think they're going to do against City? I mean, we've talked about it many times, but Newcastle, after the January transfer window, only averaged 1.2 expected goals per 90 minutes. I mean, their last 10 matches of the season, they only created 5 big scoring chances. So, I mean, they got pasted by City 5-0 towards the end of last season. And City's probably going to hold 65 to 75% possession, because Newcastle has shown that when they do play bigger sides, they tend to sit in defensively, and they basically just send Alan Saint-Maximin and Guimarães and Callum Wilson just out on islands and counters to hope that they can create something, which that's just not going to work against City. Because in the other spectrum, I mean, Newcastle, even after the January transfer window, they were dead last in offensive pass per defensive action. They were the worst team at playing through pressure. Well, City was number one in pass per defensive action, and they just smother you in your own final third. So I don't see Newcastle coming out and being able to create anything of value. They faced five big six sides after the January transfer window. They only created over one expected goal once. It was against Arsenal in the second to last game of the season. So I'm playing both teams to score no at plus 100. I have a projected at minus 130. So I think you're getting some good value on City getting a clean sheet, or, you know, if a red card happens, and then there could be some craziness. So this could be ends up being 0-0. So both teams to score no at minus 105 for me.
Anthony, it's the classic example of not wanting to overreact to one game. And, you know, we talked, I read off the stats. I said, wow, Newcastle was super dominant in the first matchup at home against Nottingham Forest. Maybe we need to reassess what we think of Forest. Maybe we need to reassess what we think of Newcastle, but probably not, because the reality is that they probably just had a great game. And I think we talk on this podcast a good amount about teams who are bad favorites and good underdogs, you know, like the Palace and the Brightons of the world that we like to bet because they're, you know, they struggle a little bit. Well, I think Newcastle might kind of be the opposite, right? They've raised the floor of their team enough to the point where when they play these weaker midfields, these weaker teams, they are able to control the possession, and maybe they don't create a ton of chances, but they dominate the flow. And then they go up against the bigger sides, like BJ just mentioned the stats, and they are getting absolutely trucked. I mean, the field tilt in the match against Brighton was 65% for the Seagulls, 35% for Newcastle, only 0.2 expected goals, 0.8 expected threat. I mean, it's really concerning stuff for Newcastle going up against these top sides because of how bad they looked against Liverpool and City last year as well. Joelinton, Guimarães, I like them, but you know, they looked a little bit out of their depth in the last, you know, matches against the bigger sides. So I would lean toward City actually in this matchup, but I'm passing here. They are a little bit inflated.
Yeah, I think a funny thing happened with that City Newcastle match last season, because Liverpool was just on this crazy run and everyone was trying to find, oh, where's the kind of hurdle that City's going to fall over, and everyone pointed to the Newcastle match, and they were able to just handle it with aplomb like they always do. So yeah, the under for me is the way to go. That wraps up the Premier League for this week, and let's move to the Bundesliga. Anthony, let's start with you, because you and I are kind of on similar pages here.
Yeah, I'm gonna buy Mainz again. Augsburg burned me last week with an impressive road win at Leverkusen, pretty undeserved, but I'm really just tired of Augsburg as a team. They continue to score goals from nowhere. I mean, they sold their top striker and yet have continued to produce enough chances to, you know, get a result. But you look across the board and we look at the last 21 games. So that's from right before the Christmas break last year in the Bundesliga to including the first two games where they did beat Leverkusen on the road. They were the second worst team except for Arminia Bielefeld, who is no longer in the Bundesliga, and Mainz, the Bundesliga team of the podcast, continued to have strong performances. They didn't beat Union Berlin. It was a pretty dead game. There was almost nothing happened in the match, but those are two top six, top seven teams who are stellar defensively. And I don't expect Augsburg to have the same kind of counterattacking success they're so reliant on in this matchup against Mainz. There's plus 120 out there. I make Mainz odds on at minus 110. So I would take them at anything plus money in this match.
I like Mainz again this weekend, big surprise, but I'm going to parlay them with the team that burned us last weekend, Bayer Leverkusen, a parlay plus 237 on the money line. You made the case for Mainz. I'm with you 100%. And then Leverkusen's taken on Hoffenheim, a very high event team. Leverkusen's defense rated out top four last year in the Bundesliga, so should be able to handle the offense from Hoffenheim. On the other end, the opposite is kind of not true for Hoffenheim, who struggled defensively or just were mediocre last year. And this Leverkusen offense was graded out as a top six side in the Bundesliga. So that parlay to me looks pretty interesting at plus 237.
Both of those numbers came down considerably after the last results, which I thought was interesting. Augsburg winning moved the market about 15 cents on Mainz, and Leverkusen was minus 180. They're now down to minus 150 on the money line. So you're buying low on both of those kind of and selling high in this situation off of a fluke result.
It's just good betting hygiene That's what that is. That's the good betting hygiene part, money line parlay in the Bundesliga. BJ, what do you have in Germany?
Well, I also love Mainz. And if you believe in expected goals and advanced metrics, you have to take Mainz this weekend. But I'm going to go with Wolfsburg. Minus 110 is my best bet. I think it's had a little low here against a newly promoted side in Schalke. I mean, Wolfsburg was nothing special last year. They were between 10th or 12th in pretty much every single offensive metric, but they did play 13 matches without their best attacker, Lucas Mecha. With him on the pitch, their expected goal differential per 90 minutes goes up 0.4. So he's makes quite a big difference, and he's finally healthy this season. Their first two matches, they drew with Werder Bremen, another newly promoted side, 2-2, but they won on expected goals, 1-0.7. And then they lost to Bayern last week, 2-0. But they did create one expected goal and only allowed Bayern 1.8 expected goals. On the flip side, Schalke, you know, their first match against Cologne, they did get a red card, so you can't really put too much into it because they did allow 3.9 expected goals. And then last weekend, they drew with Gladbach 2-2. They had a penalty in stoppage time. But you take away that penalty, they only created 0.8 non-penalty expected goals. And Schalke really wasn't that dominant in the second division last year. I mean, they had a 0.47 XG per 90 minutes allowed, XG differential per 90 minutes. And they allowed around 1.5 expected goals per match in the second division. You know, teams coming up from the second division to the Bundesliga see about a 29% increase in their expected goals allowed. So that means Schalke is going to be around a 1.9, 1.95 expected goal per 90 allowed defense. That would put them near the bottom. So I think this is a good price on Wolfsburg here. I have them projected at minus 139. So love them at minus 110, would play it up to minus 122.
All right, now on to Spain. Anthony, you and I are once again on the same page. I'll let you kick this one off in Spain.
Yeah, I'm going to take Villarreal plus a half a goal at Atletico Madrid. Atletico had a good opening weekend result. BJ is shaking his head no at me because he probably loves his Diego Simeone boys. But, well, I guess we're going to disagree. But Villarreal, you know, in the second half of last season, and we bet them a lot down the stretch, was the third best team in Spain for the majority of the second half of the season. And Atletico Madrid, once again, an excellent opening 3-0 win on the road at Getafe. But you look at the underlying metrics and it did it on about 1 and 1.1 expected goals. Alvaro Morata, the greatest finisher the world has ever seen, is back in the goals. I do not expect that to continue forever. He will not run that well. But I do think Atletico did get a little bit overvalued here. BJ and I are clearly in very disagreement because I have Atleti odds, Villarreal odds on to get a point here. So I do like the yellow submarine, our favorite team in Spain, maybe. I don't know. Who is our favorite team in Spain? Do we have one?
It was Real Sociedad. Then it was
until the spring when
it was Villarreal.
Then yeah, Bilbao, you know, yeah, it just rotates.
We love them all. But I'm with you. I like the money line on Villarreal, a good offensive team who could give Diego Simeone a run for his money. But I will tell you that once the Champions League comes around, I'll be all over Atleti once again. BJ, anything for you in Spain?
Yeah, I love a snoozer in Athletic Bilbao and Valencia. Both teams to score no at minus 115. So, you know, Bilbao was pretty dominant against Mallorca in their first match, 1.6 to 0.4 on XG, 0-0 draw. Last season, we talked about a lot. Fantastic defensive team, fifth in expected goals allowed, third in big scoring chances allowed. And in matches that they didn't face, Real Madrid, Barcelona, or Atletico Madrid, they only allowed their opponents to create over one expected goal 9 times in 32 matches. That's pretty impressive. Valencia was horrific offensively last season, created 0.85 non-penalty expected goals per match, 10.4 shots per 90, and had the fewest 10-plus pass sequences in La Liga by quite a large margin. They got a new manager, Gattuso, who previously managed AC Milan and Napoli. He'll bring them out of a 4-4-2. He'll play some version of a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1. So they'll be a little bit more threatening, a little bit more aggressive. But, I mean, they just sold their best attacking player, Guedes, to Wolves, who had 11 goals and 6 assists left for them last season. So Valencia, I mean, they were pretty conservative. They were a decent defensive team. In 11 of their 38 matches last year, one side failed to create at least one expected goal. And, you know, the two times they faced Athletic Bilbao last season, they only combined for 0.9 expected goals. So at a price of minus 115 for both teams to score, no, I have a projected at minus 161. So I like the value on that.
All right, let's move on to Syria. We'll go right back to you, BJ.
Yeah, I mean, this is another spot that I've had circled for quite a long time. Torino, plus half a goal, minus 145, or draw no bet at anything plus money against Lazio. Torino, a team we loved last season, one of the more underrated teams in Serie A. They finished 10th with a plus 9.1 expected goal differential. That was better than Lazio, who finished three spots ahead of them with a plus 7.6 expected goal differential. Torino, yes, they lost their best defender, Janielsen Bremer, but they delivered a typical type Torino performance in their first match, beat Monza 2-1, 2.6 XG to 1.6. I mean, defensively last season, they were third in expected goals allowed, shots per 90 allowed, and big scoring chances allowed. That last statistic, big scoring, third and big scoring chance allowed, is key when you're facing Lazio because they are the biggest boom or bust offense across Europe. They were second in big scoring chances last season, but 13th in shots per 90. And I'm just going to keep cursing Ciro Immobile's name until he stops finishing at this stupid, crazy rate. Lazio, 77 goals off of 55 expected last season. That's insane. It has to stop. They scored two goals off of 0.6 expected in the first match against Bologna, despite having 10 men. Their goalkeeper got a red card, so they have the second-choice goalkeeper. This is dumb. This has to stop. So Torino, plus half a goal at minus 145.
I will be joining BJ on Torino, but it was funny. BJ texted me right after Lazio equalized to make it 1-1. Remember, they were playing down a man.
It happens every time. It's so
and then
stupid.
I think it went to 10-on-10, and he texted me, 87th minute, Ciro Immobile winner is going to break me. And then I think it was the 79th that, of course, I got the goal alert, Ciro Immobile, 2-1 Lazio.
It's happened every time. And it's so
it's funny if you pull, because if you pull up the Serie A table on the FB ref, it's like everything's green. And then you just have that one sore thumb and it's Bologna's dominant performance with no points. So it's pretty funny to look at. But we will be all fading Lazio, at least BJ and I will. I will be betting Atalanta at home. This match last year, I remember because I bet Atalanta and lost. They were an even money home favorite. Now they're a home underdog at plus 170. I think that's a big overreaction to, oh, I mean, granted, Milan won the league, right? But in the second half of the season, Milan ran really well. And Atalanta, you know, everybody decided it was the end of Atalanta. And it may well be. But I still think until we get more evidence of that, I'm not going to bet against that. They had a plus 10 expected goal difference at home last year. Their actual goal difference at home, Atalanta's plus 2. So they ran pretty poorly in terms of variance at the GWIS and in Bergamo. And so I think this number is just a little bit out of control. I think Atalanta should still be a favorite. They are not. So I took them plus 100 on the draw no bet line.
All right. We'll wrap up with Ligue 1, BJ. It's all you.
Yeah, let's just jump in front of a train. Lille plus one, plus 120 against PSG. I mean, Lille has had a lot of changes over the past year. A lot of players have left. They have a new manager. But this is still the team that was second in expected goals allowed and the number one team across all five of Europe's top five leagues in big scoring chances allowed. They allowed 17 big scoring chances in 38 matches. And then at one point last season, they went on a 13-match stretch without allowing a big scoring chance. That is so impressive. It's crazy. And, you know, Lille has kind of been a thorn in PSG's side over the past two seasons. They obviously beat them by a point to win the league two seasons ago. Three out of the four meetings over the last two seasons, it's been within half of an expected goal.
Meeting was not.
Yeah, you know, the 5-1 was not. But still, you know, I mean, they at home, Lille had a plus 10.5 expected goal differential. They only allowed 0.93 XG per match. So it's still, I believe, a good team that should be somewhere near the top six or seven in Ligue 1. And I mean, I can try and poke holes in PSG all I want, but I mean, they're way, way too dominant here in Ligue 1, but you know, there's some infighting going on, you know, Neymar and PSG are fighting with each other. Neymar and Kylian Mbappe are fighting with each other. Sergio Ramos is having to play, intermediary in between the
peacekeeper.
Two. Peacekeeper, yeah, that's a good word for it. So, you know, where's the focus for PSG right now? Is it really on the field and trying to win Ligue 1, or do they just care about the Champions League? And does Mbappe or Neymar just who cares more about who's scoring the goals? So, I'll take Lille plus one at plus 120. I have PSG at minus 144. I'll jump in front of the train, but I think there's some value on Lille here at home.
And with that, we'll move on to our favorite part of the podcast, our underdog parlay.
Man, were we close.
We were close again last week, which is, kind of just what
Mitrovic missed penalty and Palace tune, up a man.
Exactly. The tune we sing every weekend.
150 to one, people.
Yeah.
It was 150.
I mean, once Mitrovic missed, I was like, all right, they're not going to score. But then they almost did score. And then Palace went up 1-0, and I slacked you guys effing Mitrovic. And then you guys got mad at me. But that was just because I was still mad about what happened Sunday.
Yeah.
That's had nothing to do, had not nothing to do with Palace leading.
No, that's mushing it, but
you mushed it.
You'll learn from that, and you're still young, so you'll learn not to do it this week when we're knocking on the door Monday, because I'm starting it with Monday Night Football, Manchester United plus 425 at home against Liverpool. This is just a severe overreaction for a team that was rated as the fifth or sixth best team in the Premier League coming into the year. They've been terrible. Everything's going wrong for Manchester United through the first 2 weeks in terrible losses to Brighton at home, away to Brentford, which they lost 4-0. But we all know that they are a better team than what they just showed. And who better to bring them out of their kind of woes, their dreariness, than their eternal rival, Liverpool, who are dealing with several injuries, including some important ones in the midfield, which is the best place, or which is where Manchester United's biggest weakness is, right in the middle of the field. So I actually think this is the best time for Manchester United to be playing Liverpool. As weird as that sounds, both teams will be licking their wounds. One of them is plus 425. The other one is minus 170, a prohibitive road favorite. So give me the one at better than 4-1. I think you can get them as high as plus 470 still. I think that's at FanDuel, but I'll go with the consensus 425. Because that's where I'm assuming it's going to end up as we get closer to kickoff on Monday. BJ, what about you?
I'm going with Cologne, plus 225 on the road at Frankfurt. This line doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, Frankfurt last season, the Bundesliga, yes, they won the Europa League, and that's cool. But they were minus 7.4 expected goal differential in the Bundesliga. They were 12th in expected goals for. They were 13th in big scoring chances. They were ninth defensively in expected goals allowed. This was not a good team. And I understand that, you know, Anthony Modeste has moved on to Dortmund. He was a massive, massive part of Cologne's offense. But I mean, Cologne last season, I mean, they were the number one pressing team in the Bundesliga, number one in bypasses per defensive action. Frankfurt, 16th in pressure success rate allowed, 18th in ball recoveries allowed. Cologne offensively also was third in shots per 90s. Now, does that go down a little bit because Modeste is gone? Yeah, sure. But I mean, I have Cologne projected as a slight favorite on the road here. And Frankfurt just sold one of their best attackers, Filip Kostic, to Juventus. So where is the offense and the creative midfielder that's going to create some stuff for their front man going to come from? I don't know, because he had 9 assists last season. So it just doesn't really make much sense to me that Frankfurt is an even money favorite at home. So I'll take Cologne plus 225.
The ghost of Mario Götze.
Yep. Anthony, what do you have for us to wrap up this three-leg parlay that you'll eventually mush?
Yeah, we're going to the island, Mallorca, at home against Real Betis. Betis had a very impressive 3-0 win, but it was aided by a red card against a team that we all believe is pretty terrible in Elche. And so, you know, now we get to sell Betis after that big win, and we get to buy Mallorca on the island, where they had a plus 0.2 XG difference per 90 last year. They were a top half team at home. It's a tough place to play. So plus 200, I'm willing to take a shot on the boys on the island.
And now we'll move on to our final segment of our podcast, our favorite bets in the Premier League for match week 3. Anthony, let's go right back to you.
Yeah, I'm going to take Brighton plus a quarter of goal, minus 110. I talked about this earlier when I bet the match. Brighton last season dominated West Ham in the second match of the season, which was actually the final match of the year, in a 3-1 victory. They also played even with the Hammers. And I think the biggest improvement we've seen from Brighton in the last year has been in defensive transition. And those are areas where West Ham needs to thrive to get big scoring chances. We have not seen much from Scamacca thus far. Antonio does not look like himself either. And this attack has really struggled to create clear scoring chances. I know they did well against Forest and didn't quite come off in terms of goals, but this market suggests that they are even or better than Brighton, and I do not believe that. So given I have this line as about a pick 'em, I will take the plus quarter goal in this matchup.
I'm going to go with Crystal Palace, the team of the podcast right now, plus 155 against Aston Villa at Selhurst Park, where they were really, really good last year. Palace was a top six defensive team in basically every predictive metric last year. They finished with a better expected goal differential compared to Aston Villa. And yet the market is telling us that Villa might be the better team. Maybe on paper, the talent's there, but right now Crystal Palace is a better team than Aston Villa, who should and have struggled to create offense against good defensive sides. So I'm going to back the Palace defense at home, plus 155. Continue to buy the Eagles. The market hasn't caught up yet. BJ, what about you?
I'm going Newcastle, Manchester City. Both teams to score no at even money. Manchester City over the last two seasons has shown us that they are just a very possession dominant, slow buildup type of team. And I expect them to hold between 65 and 75% possession here against Newcastle, who, yes, they looked great against Nottingham Forest in week one, But then when they played a team like Brighton, who is able to control possession, who's good defensively, they really struggled. Only 0.2 expected goals, only 4 shots, and only 17 touches in the penalty area. So what do you think they're going to do against the best defensive side in England in Manchester City? I mean, you know, Newcastle, they faced after the January transfer window, the 5 big 6 sides, and they only created over 1 expected goal 1 time, and it was against Arsenal in the second to last game of the season. City paced them towards the end of last season, 5-0. I don't see Newcastle scoring or creating anything of value in this match, so I like both teams to score no at even money.
And there you have it. Another episode of Wonder Goal is in the books. For Anthony DeBundo, for BJ Cunningham, wish you the best of luck. All your bets in match week 3 of the Premier League, and we will see you on the other side of the weekend.